Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2013. Lecture 12, delivered on February 21, 2013. The title of this lecture is Annuities and Perpetuities.
Today, Annuities and Perpetuities. Before I begin that, I will make one last comment about your calculations of volatility. As you can see from the answers that I am providing you here, sales and gross margin volatility will be the same, 17.64%. Your operating margin, business risk, as we call it, your operating margin volatility, which is business risk, is 23.40%. So that means that the contribution of operating leverage to overall business risk is 23.40 minus 17.64, or 5.76%. Pushing it down and taking out the interest, you have your next coefficient of variation will be 27.96%. Meaning that the interest expense, your contribution of financial leverage, is 27.96% minus 23.40%, or 4.56%. If you can do that, you can get one of the workout problems on the first exam right. Because I will provide you, two nights before the exam, the raw information. I will just give you, just like you had at the top of this sheet that it was a practice sheet, you'll be given the sales, the probabilities, the fixed costs, the percentage of variable costs, and the interest expense, all of that. It'll be given to you. All you have to do is calculate it carefully. You can bring the numbers in with you to the exam, and then there they are for you, and you've got this problem aced. And you will go home with something that mom can put on the refrigerator. Or not. Just don't make a mistake when you're doing them, though, because, as I said, standard deviation is going to stay the same once you get to the gross margin. And from there down, it's going to be the same. So if you want to do it that way, just make sure you get that standard deviation right when you do the calculation at one time. But, I want to give it to you. Don't thank me. I'm going to give you these two nights before the exam. I'm also going to give you financial statements. I won't tell you what I'm going to do with those on the exam, but you probably should be able to figure out what I would be asking for on an exam if I give you financial statements. So, two nights before the exam, you'll get financial statements, and you'll get the raw data for, like, what you saw in that practice problem. And from there, you choose to do whatever you want with them. A lot of people do them. Some people just say, I'll do it while I'm on the exam. And boy, that can be a mistake. But it's your call. Now, to annuities and perpetuities. I gave you already the introduction to annuities in the last lecture. Some of the uses of them are pretty great. I'm trying to think. Okay, one thing I just want to do is just take you through some problems with annuities and make sure that you are able to do them like a boss. Here we go. Let me turn off this, mute that, and that's what I want. Here we go. I'm going to give you just a couple of problems. First things first is just to make sure that you can do these kinds of problems right here. Let's try a... let's try a flip side. You can afford a $900 a month payment on a house. The best APR you can get on a 30-year fixed rate loan, on a 30-year fixed rate mortgage is 5.75%. How much can you afford as far as the price of a house goes? Okay, now let me read this again to you. Now, this is kind of a flip side, because in this case, you'd say, well, you know, I can handle $900 a month because that's about 25% of my income a month. And so now we can walk our way backwards and say, that gives me an idea of where I have to shoot in terms of getting a house. How much of a house can I afford with this? So now I want you to take your calculators, and we're going to just push this thing out through the grinder here. Yeah, that's going to really work well. Okay. Now if I do that, again, the whole routine with all these problems, you just go apps, finance, TVM solver. How do I do that? Apps, finance, TVM solver. And the routine, you're going to fill in what you know. Now, always know that with these kinds of loans, the FV, the future value, that's always going to be zero unless you have some kind of a balloon payment at the end, which you won't in this class. You take a little more advanced real estate course from me, I'd probably have you do some real tricky ones where you plan to sell it in 5 or 7 years or something like that. But for here, there are those last numbers, FV and those P over Y and C over Y are going to be FV is zero, and the other two are one, and make sure you have it on end. That kills people. They do it on the exam, and they forget that somehow that thing got to begin, then they're dead. So here we go. Now, through the grinder, we're going to go through this. So on the end, you're going to do 30 times 12 months per year. You don't have to hit enter or anything. Just go down to the next line. Don't forget with the I percent that you're going to key in the actual percentage, not the decimal, which you would do in any other situation. But here, just the percentage, 5.75, and don't forget to divide it by 12, because you've got 12 months happening on this. Divide it by 12, and now we're going to go down. The next one is the price value, the PV. And in this case, we don't know the price. We leave that one alone because we want to find the price of a house. And we go down to the payment and say, okay, I'm going to be able to afford on a payment of $900. Now, then just pull it back up there to that payment with your up arrow, and then just say alpha, solve, and you'll find, hey, that's not a bad house. I get one that's about $154,222. Is that what it is? $154,222. So there you go. That's what you could afford to borrow. Yeah. What did you get? Okay, look at your numbers. The N should be reading 360. Yeah. Your I percent should be reading 0.4791666. Is that reading that? Your I percent?
That is 5.75%.
Yeah, but you got to divide it by 12. Okay. And then, make sure we all got that on the same page, because that's going to be absolutely critical. divide the I by 12. It's 5.75. But because your payments are calculated monthly, that 5.75% is actually kind of irrelevant. It's what the monthly interest rate is. So that's why we do the annual 5.75 divided by 12, because then that tells us what the actual interest rate that's going to be used for calculations is. And then down from there, you get your answer. So you can figure out payments. You can figure out how much. What if you don't know the if you know the price, you can figure out the payment. If you know the payment you want to hit, you can figure out the price. You could do this with a car loan, saying, "All right, what's my affordability? Can I handle this kind of a thing on my income?" So this is one of those really practical kinds of things that you can use in this regard. Now, I'm going to take you and just walk through a couple of simple problems here.
You've gotten married, and so now it's time to have that first child. He's born, okay? And, it's cool, but you realize, my God, I am going to be called Daddy now. That's really the story. Let me tell you, I'm done. I'm out. But you have to handle that. But then comes that you realize, I have got to prepare for this child's education. I want this child to go to a decent college. So I'm going to have to figure out, all right, how much would I have for, so that when he starts college, he's going to have all the money he needs to be able to pay for his tuition, to get for 4 years of education at a fine school. So we say, okay, well, let's get some information on this. Let's get this documented.
And we're going to figure that for a four-year education, estimating that at about full $45,000 a year, 4 years of $45,000 a year, we're going to have a staggering $180,000. And that's going to happen when he turns 18. And here is this year here. So we're going to have to put in an amount of money every year, at the first year, second year, third year, all through to the 18th year. And on that last, we're going to put that last payment in, see how much is there, and then pull it all out of the bank at the same time. That seems a little weird, but that's how these annuities work. You're going to put in your last payment. Now, first thing you have to decide is this an ordinary annuity or is this an annuity due? What do you say? Is this one of these ordinary ones or is this an annuity due? Remember the rule on it? What do you say?
Ordinary.
Because the cash flows occur at the end. It doesn't matter whether it's a present value or a future value. Everything happens at the end. So we want some amount of money going in every year at the end of the year so that when we put our last payment in there, we are going to have $180,000 ready for that kid. Okay? So we got to figure out how much we got to put in every year to accomplish that goal. And so we're going to go to our calculator here. And first, we look at the bank. What bank is telling us that if you set up a long-term deposit, at the end of every year, we can give you an interest rate of 6.19% APR. So we're going to push that in here into the calculator. So we're in our time value of money, apps, finance, TVM solver, and we say, okay, now, at the end, 18 years, one payment a year. So it would be 18 times 1. Again, the end would be 18 years times one payment a year. That's 18 times 1. Drop it down. Well, that was really weird. Okay, let's try that again. Now drop it down. The CD is yielding 6.19%, 6.19. And there's one calculation a year, so that would be divided by 1. Now we push it down again. There's no present value. You're not going to put in a plop of money immediately to get this started, although you could do that. You know, we'll just get this ball rolling kind of thing, but we're not going to say no. And then we're going to put in, we don't know how much we're going to have to put in, but we know that the future value at this date in the future is going to be, have to be $180,000. So again, from the top. And we'll look, you'll look at that, that should be 18. The next line, I percent, should be 6.19. PV is zero. FV, or payment, is, well, we don't know that yet. We're going to calculate that. FV is 1800. Okay, so now let us end, make sure that it's on end, and say, all right, how much are our payments going to be? Take it up to the PMT line. Alpha solve. What? The kid can go to hell. No, seriously. I mean, the kid's going to have to sell his body on the street or something. I don't know. 5720 $5,720.16. That's what you would have to put into the bank at the end of every year to make this thing work. To have $180,000 at the kid's 18th year. That's a lot of money, okay? You say, okay. We're going to do something here. You know, this will not stand. All right, we're going to start putting in the money immediately. Instead of at the end of the first year, we're going to put it in right now, start this ball rolling. Instead of right here starting the payment, we're going to push every payment back so that the last payment goes in on the 17th year and it rides and then he pulls it out on the 18th. Let's just do it that way. Okay, that's got to make it easier. Right? Okay. So in other words, the only thing I would have to do to change this calculation is turn it from an ordinary annuity into an annuity due. Because now the cash flow happens at the beginning of the period. You're fronting it. So all you have to do to pull this stunt off is to take it down there and move the thing over, that tab at the bottom, over to begin. And then let's go back up and get those payments calculated. See what happens. And the payment comes out to be alpha solve. Oh, well, that's a whole lot better. 5,300 and, I can't even read. $86.72, is that right? Is that what you get? For God's sake, someone tell me. Yeah, okay. Well, and you see why that happens? Is because your interest is building faster on the front end instead of on the back end. That last payment's interest, in fact, rise for a whole year instead of just there's no interest in the ordinary annuity version. So it is lower, not that much lower, but at least it's a little lower. And it gives you some latitude to figure out if you can handle it that way. This is the basics of financial planning. And it also gives, it's sobering too, because like I said, you know, people have all these kinds of ideas. Well, I want to do this in 20 years, or I want to accomplish that in 5 years, or I want to plan for my kids' education. Guess what? That's going to be a wallop. And it's even worse if you put it off, though. If you want to wait until the kid's like 10, 12, or something like that, it is even worse if you wait that long for it. So this gives you sort of a view of the things that we can do with just this simple thing that we have on our calculators now, all this financial planning that's available to us. No big thing there. And like I said, well, I don't know if I said it or not, on the exam, and I'm just telegraphing my punches. My punches are hard, but I'm just telegraphing. I'll just ask you a couple of questions like this. Calculate me a payment. Calculate me an amount of money that you can achieve. All that kind of stuff. And it's just all this TVM solver stuff on the calculator itself. Taking you along a little farther, though. Cash flows can be great in the sense that if you keep the annuity level, these formulas just work perfectly. The problem comes, though, if your cash flow has some kind of turbulence in it. In other words, it's not a level annuity. In some cases, you can actually make it a lot easier. Look, let me show you one real quick here. Suppose that you had a cash flow. Here's year zero. And year one, year two, year three, year four, and year five. And I'm just going to do 5 years here. God. That almost blew the meter on my podcast. Okay. Suppose that you had an annuity that worked like this. It was $200, $200, and then it was $300, $300, and $300. The whole level annuity thing is gone there, so you can't use that simple formula and all that. There are two ways that you can do it. Two ways. And actually, quite honestly, I don't have a preference. Suppose I wanted to find the present value of this cash flow right here. Find its present value. Okay, in other words, what's that cash flow worth right here at the here and now? How much would I accept right now for this cash flow? And let's say that we are going to discount this cash flow at 8.65%. That'll be our discount. There's a brute force way to do it, which actually, quite honestly, I use myself as probably would in a lot of cases. I just take the present value of each one. You know, all I do is, this would be 200, the first one, times 1 plus 0.0865 to the negative first, plus 200, times 1 plus 0.0865 to the negative second, plus 300 times 1 plus 0.0865 to the negative third, plus 300 times 1 plus 0.0865 to the negative fourth, plus 300 times 1 plus 0.0865 to the negative fifth. Just a brute force, take each one lump sum and just haul each of those things back and see what the present value of the sum of them is. That's, it has the beauty that you don't have to think about it, you just have to make sure you don't make a mistake along the way. In other words, I'm just going to haul each one back on its own and then just add them up. And it's not that bad with someone like this. It could be a real pain in the backside if you had to do a whole bunch of them. Now, if you want to be more sophisticated, if you want to give the sense that you know your math, you might want to approach it sort of like the finance equivalent of, I don't know if this will make any sense, of like Venn diagrams. You see, what I've got here is, I have two level annuities. I have a level annuity of $200 for 2 years. So I could take the present value of that level annuity. You see it right there? That little $200 one? This is a $200 ordinary level annuity. Right there. So I could do that one. But then this $300 one. It's really a level annuity, but there's a little bit of a problem with it. Because if I treated that like on the calculator to the TVM solver, what would happen is that when I pulled those three cash flows back, I would pull them back here. Because that level annuity formula pulls you back to the beginning of the first year of a cash flow. So once I had gotten this $300 level annuity back to here, I'd have to take the present value of that thing to get of that lump right here 2 years back to get it back to here. Now, if that makes sense to you, cool. If it doesn't, don't worry about it because you can always do it as a lump sum. But again, if I wanted to, I could pull this $200 two-year level annuity back and it would come back right to here and now. The $300 three-year level annuity I can do that one too, but I have to recognize that all that does is pull it back here to this point at 2. And then I'd have to take that lump sum and take its present value on back to the present. You can do it that way if you understand the logic of it. And sometimes even with very complicated cash flows that go up and down, you can find a level annuity in there and pull it all back and then take the pieces back, something like that. I'll show you one of those. I'm just showing you this. Like I said, most of the time, I actually would just pull. I just pull them back as lump sums, one after the other, even if it is painful. Let me show you this one. Suppose that you had a cash flow over 7 years. Let's take it over 7 years. And we want to know what the present value of this. Well, it's going to, here it is. Year one, 500. Year two, 500. Year 3, 500. Year 4, 500. Year 5, 700. Year 6, 800. And then year 7, back to 500. All I'm showing you here, and again, I can't emphasize this enough, all I'm trying to show you here is that you can get creative if you want to. Well, you say, well, that was great. That was real exciting there. It looked like a level ordinary annuity. Pull it back, present value to right here. And then these two little suckers blew it. Well, not really. Because you see, $700 is $500 plus $200. $800 is $500 plus $300. So I actually have a level $500 annuity for 7 years, and then I could just take the present value of $200 back 5 years and the present value of $300 back 6 years and just add those to the ordinary annuity's present value. Again, I'm just showing you how if you see an unlevel cash flow, there are ways that you can, I mean, you can go too far and just go into gyrations that make it worse than just calculating each lump sum pulling back. But in one like this, there is really a very clean, embedded level annuity, ordinary and everything else. It's just that there are a couple of years with some extra, and I can take those pieces back as lump sums, those two pieces, and add those to the ordinary annuity. And like I said, there are all kinds of tricks. I mean, I know some people, finance people, just love to see. I do see an ordinary annuity in there. And there are other people, I don't want to do that. I'm just going to take the lump sums back. I mean, how long can it take to do that? In either case, of course, you've got to make sure that you don't make a mistake in the calculations. But there are always these little tricks. Well, not always, but there are a lot of times you can find a little trick in there for getting something, making your life a little easier. And again, I'm not going to emphasize it. It's there if you want to try it that way. Now, finally. I said annuities. And annuities, now they're okay. And they're always interesting to kind of play around with. And they have actually a lot of real use in the real world. There's someone in here I was told. And I'm not sure who it is, but I think it was you. I got this memo from the dean that it said that I had an immortal in my class. Yeah. Just stay away from the black widow because immortality goes out the window with that lady. Okay? But you're one of the immortals. So you see, you will live forever. Now let me tell you, there's some things that kind of suck about living forever, you know. Your friends die, your pets die, and things like that. And the creditors never leave you alone. 20,000 years from now, they're still hitting you up for a bill that you didn't pay. But you see, the purpose of talking about that is to talk about the idea of cash flows that never end. Is it possible that a cash flow could never end? It would just keep coming to you over and over and over again, forever and ever? And would that have a practical importance? Actually, yes, it does.
There was a big thing, when I was a kid, there was this, these banks were always advertising this interesting fact that if you were to put $50 in a bank every month for, was it 20 years? You could take $50 out of a bank for eternity, every month, and never touch the principal.
In practical terms, here's why we care about infinite streams of cash. Theoretically, a corporation will never die. So if we want to price a corporation theoretically, could we find some cash flow that represents that corporation's periodic value and then take the present value of an infinite stream of that cash? Well, the present value of an annuity formula is going to fail you, but fortunately there's another one that works. A cash flow that occurs periodically forever is called a perpetuity. In other words, an infinite annuity is called a perpetuity. Now, there's actually an incredibly easy formula for finding the present value of a perpetuity. Okay? This is called the no-growth formula. Okay? You've got to be careful. The no-growth present value is PV equals the flat, the same every time, forever and ever, cash flow, CF, divided by the discount rate for the cash flow. That's all you have to do. So what is the present value of let's say, $2,000 per year forever, discounted at, let's say, 4.50%. In other words, would you be willing to take instead of $2,000 a year forever now? That's what we're asking. Instead of $2,000 per year forever, discounted at 4.50%, what would you accept now in exchange for it? And all you have to do is say PV, it's a flat cash flow, $2,000 per year, divided by 0.045. Be sure you use the actual decimal representation because now we're back in math, not on the calculator. And if I were to work that out, you would say 2,000 divided by 0.045 comes out to be, I cannot see worth a darn today, $444.44. That's what it's worth now. It seems kind of odd, though. You'd think, well, if it's infinite, wouldn't it be worth an infinite amount of money? No, because those $2,000 that are happening in 20 years, 30 years, 50, 500 years, they're worth so little that in math, we say this converges on a number, and it converges on $44,444. It converges on a number. So that's our first key. And actually, this formula right here, this is the formula we can use to calculate the present value, the current value of a type of stock called preferred stock. Because preferred stock, if you buy a share of preferred stock, you get to keep that. You get the dividend from that every year forever. Every year forever, that preferred stock will pay you your dividend payment. Now, there's new preferred stock that actually, some of these companies are now issuing a kind of preferred where the company has the right to buy it back after a certain number of years. But classic traditional preferred stock works like this. DNB 2.0 2.3% preferred par value $40 per share has a current discount rate on the cash flow based on its risk of 2.0%. What is the price of the stock? Now let me explain. What is the price of DNB 2.3% preferred? Now let me explain how preferred works. When you buy it, it's kind of like a hybrid security. It's sort of like a cross between a bond and a common stock. It's given a par value when it's issued, and then there's a percentage on that. And that means that to find out how much your money, how much check you're going to get every year, you take that percentage times the par value. And that's how much you'll get each year forever as an owner of that share of stock. It's preferred. By the way, a company has to pay the preferred dividend before it can pay a common stock dividend. So if there's preferred out there, common stock holders will never see any dividend unless the preferred shareholders are given their dividend first. And there's even a kind called cumulative preferred. If a company misses a dividend payment to the preferred, it has to make it up and any other ones that are in arrears before it can ever start issuing dividends to common. But anyway, in this case, what you would do is so that the dividend on this stock would be 0.023 times $40. So in this case, I would say 0.023 times $40. And I get a 92-cent dividend. So in other words, every year forever, if you own this stock, you get, for each share you hold, you get 92 cent check. These are actually, well, back in the day, they were really popular with older people because the thing was, when you were older, these things are really safe, and it was like a fixed income security. You put your money, you buy 100,000 shares of preferred stock, you're going to get a dividend check for the same amount every year for the rest of your life, and even after that, forever and ever. That's why it's still got some popularity to this day, just for that fixed income aspect of it. It's like bonds that way, except bonds eventually pay off. You know, they retire bonds. These don't retire, not the classical ones. So let me take you through the grinder. So to get the price of this stock, remember that present value is cash flow over K, the discount rate. So in this case, we would say that the price value of this stock, price value of this DNB preferred, would be 92 cents per share divided by what we're discounting that at right now, which is 2%. So you would divide it by 0.02. That's that number right there. Be careful. Don't do the 2.3. That's the dividend. Now, before I do the calculation, just real quick. The market says this stock should pay 2%. That's what a discount rate means. That's what the market says. If it's paying 2.3%, does the market like this stock or hate this stock? The stock should pay 2%, but the dividend is 2.3%. So what would you say? Would the market like this stock or hate this stock if it pays more than it should? Bingo. So we should expect the price of this stock to be more than $40 a share. This stock should sell at a low in talk. Oh, that's on. Yes, that actually shocked the hell out of me. Yeah, it'll sell at a premium to par. It'll sell at a premium to its par value. If you whack this thing down on the calculator, you say 0.92 divided by 0.02, Well, spank me hard and call me Shirley. Look at that. But that's later. $46. Look at that.
It's $46. Because in this case, this stock is paying more than it should. So the market's going to, investors are going to say, this stock should be paying 2%. It's paying 2.3%. So there's going to be bidding up on the stock. Everyone is going to say, whoa, we'll buy that stock because it pays a better dividend than it needs to. So we're going to just push up the stock price.
That actually is a practical example of using a what's called a no-growth perpetuity in the real world, just finding out prices of preferred stock. And what you would do is, I'll talk about that in another one. That was just a trading symbol. You'll see me begin. I tried to sneak that in there, okay? Yeah, you caught me. I'm beginning to kind of slip you more towards actual the terminology. We don't say Microsoft or Apple. You would probably say MSFT or APL or DNB. We don't really care about the names of companies. That's done by creative idiots. We just care about their trading symbols. But yeah, you caught me. I was trying to slip in there and start using more. You'll see this happening more and more. I'll start using a shorthand that is our language. And that means that when you use that language, it'll make people really impressed with you. They'll give you discounts on ice cream and stuff like that, you know. Okay, probably not. But, you know, what the hell. You can use this terminology when trolls on the internet bother you. Okay, now, the next step. This is where we can get to a place where we can do a way of pricing common stock. The constant growth perpetuity formula. The constant growth perpetuity formula. In this case, we're going to say that the cash flow doesn't stay level. In other words, not the same amount forever. But it grows at a constant rate forever. Now, practically speaking, I got some smart ass that, you really think it's going to grow at that rate forever? And, you know, I was diplomatic with him. I said, no, you stonehead. I'm going to assume that it's going to grow for a period of time that is long enough that I don't have to worry about the present values of cash flows in 40, 80, 2,000 years. So it's a little more practical than some people might attack it for being. And it works like this. The present value and the constant growth rate. We're going to say that the growth rate is G. So I'd say, well, if the growth rate of the cash flow is 4%, G would be 0.04. If the constant growth rate is 8%, 0.08. Yeah, something like that. So there's this constant growth rate, G, here. That's going to be involved. Now, the constant growth rate perpetuity formula works like this. The present value will be the cash flow in period one, divided by the discount rate minus that growth formula. Here's where you have to watch it. And I can promise you on the first exam, this is where the pretty much the only place that people fall down on it, is that you have to use the cash flow one period out. So in other words, if I tell you the current dividend, you have to grow that one period. So if I tell you CF0, you have to grow it by 1 plus G to get the number that actually you use in the formula. It's just the way it is. That's how the formula works. TRJ common pays 25 cents TRJ common just paid a 25 cent per share dividend
per share dividend that is expected to grow at 5% per year for the foreseeable future. If we discount the cash flows at, let's say, at 7.8%, what is the current price? What is the current price of TRJ Common?
You know, I look at that light and then I bring my eyes up and you guys are just green as hell. It's just like
Okay, here. Now, before I do that, I'm going to just ask a question. It's kind of like random out there. If you answer that question, I'll just kind of like be really shocked.
Here's the first stock, I had like a discount rate of 2.0%. And here I'm using a really bigger discount rate. Is there some reason for that, or is it just because, you know, I'm totally random and I'm getting senile? There was, you're right. It might be that I'm just getting senile. But what was the reason, you know? Madam, would you know the answer? Why? Why did I use such a bigger discount rate here than I did for the preferred stock? There's a reason. I mean, he was smart enough to know there was a reason. Do you see the reason? Heck, that's fine. It's a little bit soft. Woman? You got a guess on I mean, I used 2.0% of the discount rate for that preferred stock. All in here, I'm using some much larger, 7.8%. Is there a kind of other reason for it? Yeah.
Because there are two different types of stock.
What? Well, we can't talk about the top.
The preferred stock, you get paid first.
Come on. Good. And that means that it would be safer.
Take more money.
And the lower the risk, the lower the See, so there's nothing madness. I would say, you know, with discount rates on the first stock, you'll always see those discount rates very low because they're, as you said, they have a prior claim. It's equity, so it still is subordinate to debt. All debts will still get paid first. But there is actually a priority of claim on the equity participants that the preferred participants will get theirs before anything happens with the common shares. So keep that kind of in mind in an investment framework. Well, I'm going to look at this common stock. It looks pretty fun. Look to see if there's any preferred stock out there. Because if there's preferred stock and that company starts struggling, the preferred, the bondholders will get there first, and then the preferred shareholders will get their dividends, and only after that, if there's anything left, will the common stockholders get anything at all. So that kind of gives you a little bit of a perspective on the essentially what we would call the risk structure of investments in a firm. So walking through the grinder now, the first thing what we're going to have to do here is you've got to get that cash flow one period out. So the dividend here at period one is going to be the current dividend times one plus the growth rate of those dividends. So in this case, I can't use 25 cents. I have to grow at 0.25 times 1 plus 0.05. That's what the dividend will be one period out.
Don't forget to do that, for God's sake. And I will ask a question like this on the exam. It won't be much harder than this one. And the only trip you can make, really, other than a calculation error, is to use D0 instead of D1. So here we go. Through the meat grinder, I do 20.25 times 1.05, and I get 0.2625. So now, the price of this TRJ common is going to be 0.2625 divided by the discount rate, 0.078, minus the growth rate, 0.05. Now make sure you do your orders of operations here properly. Divided by parenthesis, 0.078 minus 0.05, close parenthesis equals. And I find out that the current price of TRJ should be $9.38 per share. There you go. That's all there is to it. And then in the next lecture, I'll show you all, just pretty much exactly how I would ask it. But this is the meat. If you can do this and price a stock this way, you're in business. That's all I have for you. I thank you.